You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. Joining me this evening, we've got Craig Manson. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening, how are we doing?
Ian Hayes with us again. Hello, Ian.
Hello, I'm currently messing about with my monitors. I'm confused now.
Monitors is in like screens or monitors? Have you got like the full rock and roll setup where you're getting yourself played back to you?
Not sound wise, just more visual. No, I'm double monitored up, but that's usually with my work laptop, and I've just plugged a new one in, and now the mouse was moving the wrong way. It was like having inverted mouse.
Oh, is it like where the mouse looks like it's going all the way around the back of the computer and through the other side?
Yes. Yeah.
You need to switch your screens. Right click. Allocate one as one and one as two.
Yeah. I've actually swapped one and two over. I just found that at the very last few bars of the song. But I don't know if I've verified, you know, made it do the identify detect thing. I might just unplug the damn thing, to be honest.
We'll be fine. Listen, this is a good tutorial in using dual screens. We are nothing if not a public service.
They're vital for some circumstances, and I recommend it if you have the facilities to do so. I recommend dual monitors.
Dual monitors are amazing. It's life-changing. You know that it makes me feel like, do you remember the guy with the headset in Cloud City in Empire Strikes Back? First time I got dual screens, that's exactly how I felt.
Does he just look like Mr. Strickland from Back to the Future, or is it the same guy?
I don't think it is Mr. Strickland. No, I don't think it is Mr. Strickland, is it? I mean, because not. He also looks like somebody else.
Yeah, so what else is Mr. Strickland? God. He's in like all the teen things as angry substitute teacher guy who will write his name on the chalkboard and make it squeak.
Is James Mr. Strickland's James Tolkien, of course.
Yeah. You know what, Chewbacca? You're a slacker. You're a slacker. You're a slacker.
I don't believe he is the same person that was in Empire Strikes Back.
No, I don't get us either.
I've got lots of geeks listening to this. Can someone tell us
now I feel like I've just, you know, I've been, I don't know exactly what kind of, it's not exactly racist, but just suggesting that all bald people of that ilk in the 80s look exactly the same.
All bald men in 80s films look the same.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a stretch, Ian. I don't think that's being racist.
No. What's baldest?
I don't know. What I can tell you is Empire Strikes Back. If you type in Empire Strikes Back Cloud City, then one of the auto suggestions is bald guy.
Excellent.
He's called Lobot.
Lobot.
They shaved his head and drilled holes into them.
Nice.
So, but it's not Mr. Strickland.
By choice or?
A male human from the planet Bespin who, with the assistance of AJ-6 cyborg construct, was paid to run battlefield calculations for the Galactic Empire. And then he went to be a croupier on Cloud City.
Where the money's at?
I don't know if we can find... I'm trying to find out who the actor is, though.
That's like getting a residency in Vegas, moving to Cloud City.
Hollis. John Hollis is the actor that plays the bald guy. He's not the same man that plays... Mr. Strickland. This is a hell of a rabbit hole we're falling down here.
Let's probably skip this now. We're losing people.
We've still done 7 minutes of talking about Mr. Strickland.
and the bald guy from Cloud City.
Can't fill this well after Scotland.
I've not even introduced Johnny in. Hello, Johnny.
Hello.
He was late coming on, to be fair. Look, anyway, this is the kind of high-quality chat you get week in, week out with this podcast. More of that to come. If you are listening to us, you will have found us on one of the podcast platforms, numerous that they are, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, anywhere else you can get audio podcasts. We are also broadcasting live at the moment on Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch, and you can watch the podcast back on there as well. If you're our Patreon, go to patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast, and from £3 a month, you will get not only the main podcast without adverts, but you'll get a bonus weekly podcast as well that you can watch on a live stream and watch back later. And also, you get a special audio, an audio version of that as well. So this week then, we've got some big news. The biggest news of the day, which probably is the most excited I think our group chat has been, is that Bruce Springsteen is playing Murrayfield next May.
It's like someone Bruce. Took a Venn diagram of my interests.
It's, and we're like, yeah.
Springsteen at Murrayfield, ta-da!
So, given we've opened with 7 minutes of nonsense, what we thought we'd do is come up with some Bruce Springsteen Scottish Rugby puns to open with. Johnny, have you got, you've got a couple, I think.
Yeah, I'll go for my twofer, which is obviously a homer pick, which is 4th of July, Duffus Park, brackets, Tandy.
Very good.
Little double good. One for you there.
Did you have any, Ian?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Rona had Born to Rock.
Born to Rock's very good.
Yeah. Yeah. What did I have? Yes, you can look, but you better find touch.
Oh,
I like that one. Yeah.
Everybody's got a Grayson Hart. and one I came up with just a wee while ago, which also invokes Warren Zevon, who I adore. It's a song that Bruce and Warren were trying to co-write. So one's called Genie Needs a Shooter, and one's called Janie Needs a Shooter. So, you know, Dave Rennie, you know, Rennie needs a hooper.
Excellent.
Very, very topical. Andy Steele saying, will Tooney play Bruce out of position and have him as the support act?
Yeah. Well, the Chili Pipers are doing the 3-hour set.
Please don't.
The Chili Pipers are playing the entire Born to Run on bagpipes.
My mate Stop used to it. Be their sound engineer.
The Chili Pipers. Yeah. How do you sound engineer the Chili Pipers?
Stand far away.
I'm glad you said that because my answer was going to just be turn everything down.
I was going to say just like having to kind of like show great. Yeah, what we need is a sound engineer with significant amounts of self restraint.
One of the funniest people, like sort of showbiz celebrities he met during his time with them was Lionel Blair, who I've seen a video of making a very rude hand gesture. Which was
at the Chili Pipers.
No, it was in the pub after the show, and he said he said that Lionel Blair had the most bawdy stories he's ever heard from all his years on tour with him.
I can imagine.
My dad used to do the lights at the Edinburgh, the King's Theatre in Edinburgh, and used to. Lionel Blair used to lend him his sports car to run about town in all those years ago. That's years ago when he was young.
I bet Lionel knew where quite a few bodies were buried.
Oh, I'm sure.
did you have any Bruce Springsteen rugby puns, Craig?
The only one I could come up with is Doohan Bound Train.
Oh, nice.
I've got some minor fairly. I've got Streets of Alandelphia.
That's very good work.
We had born in the URC, which is fairly straightforward. Horn to Run.
Nice.
Johnny Gray 99.
Nice.
Johnny instead of Johnny 99. And this is a stretch for see what works as Highway P. Schumann instead of Highway Patrolman.
I like it. Do you know who had some really good ones? Rory's were brilliant.
Yeah, have we got Rory? Has anyone got the chat? Rory's were very good.
Dancing in the Dark was my favourite.
Yes. Kitty McRae's back in town.
Yeah.
Oh, Darkness, on, the
Darkness on the Edge of Townsend, yeah.
Darkness on the Edge of Toonie. That was Toonie. Good, yeah. The tie's like crouch, bind, engage.
Yes, I like that as well.
So, yes.
So, needless to say, I think there'll be a podcast trip to see Springsteen next year.
Yes, I've already been tasked with buying the tickets, as Rona will be busy in CT that day. So,
I think what we'll do is we'll record a podcast afterwards. Even if there's rugby on the week before. It's like, we're just going to talk about what happened at Murrayfield with Bruce's set for 2 hours. So that was exciting news. What else were we going to talk about tonight? Shall we talk about the rumours of Glasgow's new coach? Craig, were you pushing your laptop back away from you there in a fit of giggles, or was...
No, so he can get his giant bucket of popcorn out. That's what...
I'm just going to sit back here and...
So, Rob Robertson at the Daily Mail is reporting that John Dalziel, Scotland forwards coach, is in talks to be the new Glasgow Warriors coach on a part-time basis. No, not part-time, sorry, job share basis with his forwards coach role until the end of the World Cup. Johnny, this seems like a supremely bad idea on a number of levels.
Yeah, that's not to say that John Dalziel's a bad coach. I like John Dalziel. I think John Dalziel's a really good coach, and he's a really good forwards coach for Scotland. Have we looked at some of the front rows that we've got on this tour in Argentina at the moment? Because I think John Dalziel's going to be pretty busy till the World Cup. I don't know how much time he's going to be able to commit to Glasgow, given the state of the front rows at the moment in the national team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got work to do. Let's put it that way.
What does it forward
ask him to do?
I suppose the question is, because we've got a scrum coach, though. So what does a forwards coach do?
Craig.
Well, the forwards coach will deal with your... he'll basically deal with your... how your forwards are going to play, how they're going to move forward, how, you know, deals with... depending on how many... whether you're going to have line-out coaches or whether you're going to coach a line-out yourself, say it again with a scrum, also with when it comes to the breakdown, dealing with breakdown as well as defensive attack and defensive scrums, line-outs, breakdown, etc. So anything to do with forwards, really.
Did they have pods as well, or would that be more a forwards coach? Sorry.
No, we do. That's the comms people that do the podcasts.
If I think of myself as a forward coach, I would be dealing with pods as well.
Yeah.
What's buzzing?
Who's buzzing?
Yeah, it's really, really annoying, isn't it?
It's like someone's...
Oh, I think it might be my phone. Oh, it's my phone. Sorry.
Sounded like someone's trying to start some ambient music.
My bad.
Phone, is it? Aye.
Ian. Are you enthused by this? I mean, Mark Dodson was promising that... Well, he didn't promise. He said the Glasgow job will attract the best candidates in world rugby, I think, or words to that effect. And it turns out it's attracted a guy three desks away who probably isn't going to cost an awful lot of money.
Well, this was like, as soon as Danny Wilson was put down...
He wasn't put down, come on.
Well, he was put down... repeatedly with pithy remarks.
I've got images now.
To the farm.
I was going to say the Glasgow squad. Where's Danny gone? Oh, we've sent him to the farm.
He's having a lovely time. There's lots of other coaches there.
He gets to sniff their bums and everything. It's great.
All right, that's enough about Danny Wilson's passing habits. but as soon as it was, announced that he was gone, John Dalziel was the first choice. If it was going to be like an in-house appointment, I said it will be John Dalziel. But then then we got the talk of, oh, we're scouring far and wide for the very, very best. It's like, oh, but you're just going with the guy three doors down. If they just said from the outset, we will promote him, because they've pushed Pete Horn up pretty quick through the rankings, so I don't think anyone would have a complaint, but because they've made this promise of scouring the globe for the best, to then a few weeks later be like, I mean, this, of course, this is only Rob's info. We've yet to hear from the SCRE themselves.
Yeah.
Rumours are just rumours. I mean, I'm not saying...
I've got, this is mad tinfoil hat territory, but interestingly enough, Stuart Lancaster has been linked 2 days ago, 2 days before that announcement, Stuart Lancaster was linked to Racing 92. And then all of a sudden we get Rob being linked, you know, leaked with the probably going with John DL. Now, it might not be Lancaster, but it does, we've seen it from the SIU before, and it happened to the SIU before. All it takes is someone's agent. It might be Stuart Lancaster, it could be another coach's agent, you know, just leaking stories or stonewalling the SIU about a deal, and then the SIU go, right, well, we'll leak a story and say we're thinking about somebody else, and that might turn the head or make them think more seriously about our offer. Now, it could be Lancaster. His agents are saying, kind of flirting eyes at Racing 92 to make the SIU try to up the money. And the SIU are just playing hardball going, oh, well, if you're not interested for the money we're offering, we'll just promote John here and give him the job.
I think they'll be part of that. I think, you know, but, you know, Prendergast has left Racing and is to go back to Munster. So there is a fairly high level position for Lancaster, but does Lancaster
Does he want to commute to Paris though? From Lancashire, he was struggling enough to get him to go to London, to get the England squad down to London. He insisted on training in Leeds the entire time he was there, just so he didn't have to travel far.
I think the other side of things is the fact that does he want another coach's job, or does he want to come and actually be a DOR and run the team, you know? So, but even if it is Glasgow, but you know, we'll wait and see.
So, what are we going to see, Ian?
Even if it is Glasgow, what's that mean to mean?
That's right. I was being bitchy. Like, I'm allowed to be bitchy. I've been with Johnny for the last 4 hours, so I was just
in the golf.
Rubbish.
19 minutes and 31 seconds. Need to go back and correct that. Thank you, Johnny.
Well, he had to ask, didn't he? Like, there's only one way to...
Couldn't have waited for the Patreon pod where the Lord swear, could you? And had to poke the bear.
I didn't say it. It was...
I know it's him that said it, but...
It's not like you didn't know that was going to be the reaction.
It's like dealing with kids. When my kids are fighting, you know, it's like, you know, the one that's punched is in the most trouble, but the one that... continually prodded the one that eventually snapped is in a fair amount of bother as well.
Continually prodded. And I just sit got a short temper. Jeez.
And I just sit in the background smiling. That's it.
I know. Only because John's not here this week, Craig. Anyway, right. So the other kind of thing I wanted to talk about, and I was going to make this my hands and rock, but I thought I might as well cover it while we're here, is the under-20s. And there's a lot of people getting very, very panicked, Craig, about the fact that the under-20s have had a poor run of things. And apparently this is now going to be... Scotland are now destined for successive wooden spoons because our under-20s are getting spanked. Now, I seem to remember that... maybe I said from a couple of seasons ago, but generally our under-20s have never... They've had the odd result. But I don't think the performance of the under-20s is necessarily indicative of the future performance of Scotland teams, because it's not, you know, you don't just pick up the entire under-20 squad and then plonk it in your Six Nations squad the next year. It's a continual thing.
Italy under-20 is really good.
Yeah, and they've always been good, though.
Yeah, so it's clearly not a signifier of what's going to happen to the senior team.
Well, it's difficult because that's the question you have to really ask, don't you, Johnny? It's because if you look at, for example, Garbisi's come through, who's the young lad that scored a try against Wales to win, or did he set the guy up? You know, they have a youth system that's starting to get into gear now, I think, in Italy.
Capuzzo,
that's the guy, yeah. We've never... I don't remember, and I'm sure I'll be corrected online, but I've never really seen us... We've never really had an absolutely storming under-20 squad. They all seem to develop once they get into senior rugby.
And that's where our gems come out of. But also the sevens circuit seems to develop them more than the under 20, because George Horn played under 20s and he was seen and he was liked, but then when he went to sevens, it was that's really where he developed and became the player that he is. So it's a difficult one. I know that Kenny Murray has come out and said that it's needing top down review of the under 20s section, or the youth pathways. So it'll be interesting to see what he's got to say about it.
I suppose the thing is then, Johnny, that if, like Craig said, if the development comes on for Scottish players when they enter senior rugby, maybe the difference is that a lot of the other under-20s are already playing senior rugby. If you look at the likes of England, maybe they're more exposed to that earlier than Scotland do. And we said last week, it's not necessarily a good or a bad thing, because there's an argument to say you don't want to introduce people too early to the rigours of it.
Yeah, I think that the other countries definitely do rush people through a lot earlier. Like, I don't think Lewis Rees-Sammet, for example, would be in the Scotland senior team at 18 like he was in Wales. And then there's also an element of, like, I know we joke about it and stuff, but a lot of the players in the Scotland senior team didn't come through the Scotland system. Like, we've got a really good expat program and a really good program for going out and discovering talent who are Scots qualified in other parts of the world. We don't rely as much on our under 20s as much as someone like Italy does, because we're able to go out and go and bring in Scottish qualified talent from other parts of the world. So, like, it's frustrating and it's quite upsetting to watch the under 20s get beaten around every week, but I don't think it's a like harbinger of doom for the national team, to be honest.
Yeah. Ian, sorry. You'll go on.
Well, when you go in,
God, see, we're all so damn polite around here. Sorry, I had to nip out there. There was a Rona had headphones on. There was a buzz at the door, so she couldn't hear it and had to run out. The thing is, it is a little bit embarrassing. A lot of the times, what the common sort of theme is that the Scottish under 20s look physically underprepared. Like, you know, like who's doing their S&C, and they seem to get bulldozed quite a lot. But like Johnny also said, is that he can't always class under 20s as a sort of guide to who's going to progress onto greatness, because we've all seen people who are great sportsmen at juniors or, you know, amateur level who haven't been able to progress onto professional. But, you know, you will get, there should be some shining lights coming through from there, and most of them seem to be coming from down south rather than coming through Scottish club pathways.
Well, my point I was going to make was you also have to look at the fact that, and you can probably hit me back with Italy years, but if you look at England, for example, each club has their own academy. And they're being the boys in the academy are being introduced to senior level rugby. For, you know, you look at Henry Arundel and which I think some of the other players, the younger players that are coming through, that, you know, they're being introduced into senior level rugby earlier. And if you look at our Super Six, for example, you know, you're not seeing a huge amount of the under 20 squad playing in Super Six. There are a few, but for example, Callum Norrie, who has come through the system through Howe and then gone to Strathallan, and then he was playing for Stirling. He came on a couple of times. I think he started
in one of the games,
and then all of a sudden, for Stirling.
All right.
And then was hooked at 30 minutes or 20 minutes. And so it's they're not, and as we know with props, and we've talked, you know, I'm going to talk about props, but if you look at, for example, Xander Fagerson, he needed a lot of time to get to the level he's at. And unfortunately, because we needed a tight head prop, and he was showing himself to be a very, very good tight head prop, he was brought into the team a lot quicker than a lot of teams would bring in a prop at that age. So it's I don't know if they're getting the senior level rugby as much as we would probably like them to.
Yeah, there's a question here on Twitch. We've got Nemesis 69 says, do you not think if you're good enough, you're old enough to play at senior level? I think we've made that point in the past. I think the question is whether or not they're ready for senior rugby.
What Craig was saying about Xander Ferguson was kind of fast-tracked, and because we were so short at tight head. But he was interesting. I thought he was holding his own. Like, I remember his debut Six Nations game. Even Paul O'Connell, I think it was Paul O'Connell's first co-commentary job just after he'd sort of announced his retirement. And it was against Ireland. He said that he was like, actually, the penalty should have gone to Scotland because Ireland were angling in once he got a view of Spider Cam. So maybe that exposure, I think that exposure to high level has helped. Obviously, one of the problems with Scotland is that we only have the two pro teams. So getting decent exposure to, as Craig said, you know, sort of top level club level of senior rugby can be difficult. And speaking of which, yesterday we saw Jamie Dobie is going to be playing at Bay of Plenty in New Zealand, which I think was an interesting move. It will certainly, I think the only other player we've had off them is Hugh Blake. Cole Forbes came from Bay of Plenty actually.
And didn't Finn go and spend a bit of time out there on the John McPhail scholarship as well?
Yeah.
Was it them or it was Taranaki?
Yeah.
No. Was it Taranaki? I can't remember. We'd have to look it up.
The other thing as well about playing at senior level, you know, is like Ian just touched on the conditioning and the size of the players and stuff. And I will come back to Callum again because he's the one that me and Craig know because we play with his dad, so we've known him since he was dead wee. And he came on in the under 26 Nations, and I didn't recognize him when he came on because he went away to Strathallan when he was 17. And it's a completely different shape now to what he was like when he left. So when you start bringing players into senior rugby at like 18, 19, a lot of them have still got a lot of physical development to do. So you might be good, but you might find yourself playing a position that you're maybe not physically prepared for because you're still in the process of develop it into your body shape. So you've kind of got to factor that in as well. Like I would never in a million years, when Callum left Howe, would I have thought he was going to be a tight head? And that's where he's playing now for Scotland in the 20s because he has a totally different shape now at 19 to what he was when he left.
Yeah, I would, that's Johnny's buying on with that. You know, Callum, I know we're talking about Callum and we're not trying to pick on him or you know, because he's a really, really good lad and we know the family and all like the family a great deal. We would have thought he was going to be a second rower or a back rower. He was a tall lad, very, very fit, very, very strong, rowed. He crewed with row, you know, he rowed a lot and everything. He was really, really, that was what we expected. And all of a sudden, I was exactly the same as Johnny when he came on for under 20s. Callum's on, and he just is a different shape. So I don't know whether it's they're picking these big fit lads. I think we talked about this the last time. They're picking these big fit lads to go right. Well, we're gonna put them into programs with private schools so that they you know we'll get the you know they're going to the gym five 6 days a week and they're going to build them into these monsters. But I don't think. I personally am unsure whether the academies for Glasgow and for Edinburgh are exposing these players to enough senior level rugby, hard, nasty senior level rugby that we all used to play.
Seeing as we had this link up with was it Stade Niçois in D2?
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't we send all our boys over for a season of D2?
go and send the young lads out to scrum against some 40-year-old gnarled Georgian.
Yeah, they might lose an eye or something, but they'll be fine. But that's the thing.
Michael Bisping won a UFC championship with one eye. They'll be fine.
Yeah, but I could, you know, I know it's not going to happen because it doesn't happen anymore because of health and safety and things like that. But I learned all my scrummaging work when I was an under 18, going into senior. We trained with the senior men, and we would sit and we'd scrummage together. Now, I know it can't happen, and I'm not harking back, oh, it was better in the older days. It wasn't. But, it, like, for example, my son is doing pre-season at the moment with the senior men, and he's been with them now for 2 weeks. There's no contact. It's all just fitness. But just being able to talk and spend time with them and look at the size that they are and think, right, well, you know, I need to work on that. It has developed them for 2 weeks automatically. And it's not that it's, you know, it seems to be that when they go into these academies, they get put into a bubble. And I don't know if
there's a difference, isn't it? Because there is a difference. And my brother, I've talked to my brother about it before when he went from, you know, playing hooker at Colts level to going and playing for Berwick Firsts. And he, you know, he'd say the same, you know, it's you're going from playing against lads the same age and same size as you. And to a certain extent, if you're good at that level or even excel at that level, there's nothing to fear because you're going up against someone your own age, mostly your own size. Whereas I remember my brother going in, I can't remember who it was. He was up against, it was a former Scotland international hooker. And my brother said, my brother kept winning against the head. And the guy said, if you do that again, I'm going to do you the next scrum. So my brother did it again and got to do it at the next scrum. But he said, that's the kind of stuff that you have to go with. You have to kind of be able to stand, not be intimidated going in up against as an 18-year-old prop, like Xander Fagerson, for example, going in and scrummaging in his first scrum up against an England front row where, you know, of whoever it would have been at the time, like probably Dylan Hartley might have been up against, you know, and the likes of that, you know, old guys that have been around the block. And that's not the same as playing somebody your same age. So, yeah. I
used to hate playing against those adults, old boys in them, because you know for a fact that they know every single trick in the book. And you're going to get to see the whole array of it by the end of the game. Are you like you cannot? You're right. You can't prepare yourself for that at age grade.
Yeah. Well, we don't know what the answer is. More rugby somehow, but against. I don't know. Maybe a B league, a URC B league.
Well, hang on. What's probably the point of all? Well, if we're punting all that money to Old Glory, why not send them over some MLR as well?
Can we not get them in this funny curry cup with the Irish B teams?
Yeah.
Speaking of Jamie Dobie, by the way, prime SRU/Glasgow comms behaviour to announce that he's got to play for Bay of Plenty 24 hours after he was on Bay of Plenty's Instagram page.
That's just a time difference, surely. We'll coordinate. Someone's just misunderstood the time difference. We'll coordinate our announcement at the same time.
So, so this is for tomorrow. All right, yeah, no problem.
That's fine. tomorrow at 9, yeah, and nobody's gone. GM, is that BST or New Zealand time? okay, should we talk about the Argentina game then?
Well, I suppose we should.
Yeah. That scoreline, I was watching the highlights again tonight just to kind of remind myself of what happened. And I kind of, that scoreline flattered Scotland quite a lot. I know Argentina were pretty poor, but it didn't feel, and even on rewatch, it didn't feel like we were that good, Johnny.
No. What we did do, though, is took every chance that got given to us, mm-hmm. which is not something that Scotland always do. So we probably didn't play well enough for 80 minutes to merit that scoreline, but every time we had an opportunity to score, we took it. So, you know, we can't be too mad at that because traditionally Scotland don't always do that. So it was nice to see it happen for once.
What was the difference for you then, Craig, between last week and this week?
I think our forwards were stronger, more confident. I think Hamish and Darge, Rory Darge, were very strong, gave the rest of the forwards confidence.
I like the fact that Jamie Lyle has called them the Jackal Brothers.
The Jackal Brothers, yeah, like to me, to you.
Yeah. Right at the end, that nearly deserved an atting and a round of applause tweets.
I think it's they seem stronger at the set piece, and I think the sort of the rustiness or the lack of effort kind of was shaken off. They didn't start well, and then when come half time, I think they kind of realised actually we're going to get beaten here again if we don't get our act together. I am concerned about Blair Kinghorn, and it's the first time I've really watched and maybe taken my Kinghorn shaded glasses off and gone, is he does? I really don't think he suits Tooney's game plan at 10, and I'm concerned about it. So I think when we started bringing in the crash ball, I think we obviously identified a weakness in the 10-12 channel for Argentina. So we started throwing these crash balls, and it seemed to work. I think that was the main difference. I think also, give him his due. When Ross Thompson came on, he turned into a more Finn, because we went to a more Finn Russell and Adam Hastings style 10, where we weren't putting these sort of backdoor passes out that were being dropped, etc., or missed. He went back to his sort of the same sort of style as Finn and as Adam Hastings would play. It seemed to click again, and that's where he seemed to suit the Tooney game plan a little bit better than Blair did.
Yeah, Ian, you've not been here for the last few weeks, and we've kind of gone over the Blair Kinghorn thing. It feels like a little bit to death, but Gregor Townsend has forced us once again to talk about it. And Craig alluded to it there, and it does seem, and I think what the conclusion we came to last week is that Gregor Townsend obviously likes Blair Kinghorn as a 10, but isn't prepared to change Scotland's game plan or the way Scotland play to suit the way that Blair Kinghorn can play.
Yeah, Kinghorn certainly, one thing with Kinghorn is we know he's such a good runner that he can keep defences on their toes as he's playing flat. What we end up seeing a lot of the time, and like you said, I've not been on for a while, but I mean, what I see time and time again is people outside them either overrunning or he's throwing it behind them. There seems to be a lack of cohesion between him and Sam Johnson. And whether that's, I don't really view Sam Johnson as a crash ball runner, although some people do. I think he's got I think he's got a more rounded game than that. I think he's maybe been asked to do that. It opens up a whole other thing of range of possibilities about midfield, because we look at how good Mark Bennett's been playing. Previously, Chris Harris would be undroppable. But
no, he's a Tory.
I'm glad you said it. And not even a successful Tory either.
Out in the group stages, Tory.
but he didn't even make it out of the repechage.
I can see Johnson and Harris, they are they're not the paciest. They're not going to cut lines and burst through pace. I mean, obviously, Johnson's done that with his try, but that's because it was quite a short-range one. So now I'm starting to think, Bennett has been playing so well at 13. And I love Mark Bennett, and I quite like seeing him in that jersey. Is it time to mix it up? Could Harris even go in at 12? Because I think, one of the squad selections for this weekend, Sione Tuipulotu at 12, I'm fed up of seeing this being attempted because, all right, fine, he's a crash ball. He can do a crash ball, but he isn't as good a defender as Sam Johnson.
Harris is the best defender, though. That's why he plays 13. He's kind of wasted at 12.
The thing is, like, if you're going to get people, like, Harris doesn't miss tackles. So if you're going to get people running down that channel, he's good at that part. And also it means he can organise more from 12. He's a central man. Bennett's pretty good in defence. Actually, he doesn't get as much credit as he's quick and he can move fast and he gets back in position. But yeah, it's more that this, I don't like this Tui Pulotu at 12 thing that's going on, because when he was signed by the Warriors, it was like, oh, he's an outside centre and winger. And I don't believe he's played for Glasgow even once at 12. Maybe he has, like, just as a squad rotation thing. But I'm sure he's played more for Scotland at 12 than for Glasgow.
Yeah, he's played more at 12, I think, than 13 for Scotland.
Yeah. And I don't understand that when you've got Johnson, who has been playing consistently at 12 and is a 12, and then you chuck him out for someone who isn't a 12, and he's done this repeatedly.
People always forget that, like, bar the Calcutta Cup game in at Twickenham, where Cam Redpath played 12, in the last sort of 4 or 5 years, every really, really, really good Scotland performance, Sam Johnson's been at 12. So why are we mucking about with all these other ideas?
The thing is, though, I totally understand what you're saying there, Johnny, and I accept what you're saying. But that's when you've got someone like Hastings and you've got someone like Finn Russell, who throw flat passes, kick over the gain line. You don't see the ball being brought to the second attack line behind the 10 very regularly with Finn Russell or with Hastings. So Sam Johnson plays incredibly well from that. And this is where I get a bit frustrated with the whole Blair Kinghorn thing. Blair Kinghorn doesn't play that way, and he never has. And he's a runner. He's a 10, he's a runner. Now, whether we're wrong in playing him at 10, I'll give you your chance to talk about that. I know that you and John absolutely don't believe that he's a 10 for Scotland. But where he has worked incredibly well with Edinburgh is having a second distributor outside him. Because I know Ian disagrees with me, but I don't think Sam Johnson's a second distributor. I think he's someone to deal with a flat pass or someone to run onto a kick overhead. He's a good defender. And so where I'm confused with Tooney is the fact that I thought when he named Hutchison in the team, I thought he's coming in at 12 and that's going to be a nightmare for Argentina, because you're going to have Blair Kinghorn attacking the soft shoulders, putting passes out the back, and you've got a second distributor there with Hutchie. And he didn't put him there, and that's what threw me.
Just out of interest, like, who played most for Edinburgh at 12 last season? Because, I mean, I wouldn't, like, Christine, who I'm quite a big fan of, incidentally, I don't really see him as a distributor. Did Lang play quite a lot at 12?
Lang played a lot, and then Christine came in when Lang was injured. But also, if you look at Christine playing under Mike Blair, he is a distributor. He's no longer, because he was
a lovely offload against Glasgow, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's where I always used to call Christine out. Why is he playing? He never passes the ball. But that was under Cockerill. When he's under Blair, he is starting to distribute a lot more.
Because there's a lot of times at Edinburgh that Blair Kinghorn's come in at second receiver as well. That they stick Twelt Lang stuck Lang outside a nine, and then Kinghorn's run onto it.
Yeah,
and that's not the job he's been given at Scotland. And I think I know Johnny, you were saying about the England game with Cam Redpath. I think the problem that Townsend has is he's wanted to play the second distributor at 12 in the past, but his second distributor at 12 has always then got horrendously injured, like within one match, whoever he's picked. But it seems like utter madness then, and the opportunity you get to try it again to just say, well, I'll stick with these bits of what's working and then just hammer in some other random bits and see if they work, rather than trying to start again, almost say, okay, we've got Blair Kinghorn's coming, he's playing really well at Edinburgh. What would work? How can we fit a game plan around him if, say, Finn Russell or Adam Hastings are going to get injured? And it's just, well, we'll just throw him in with our current systems and just see what happens, I guess. And then the moment he switched to fullback, which I don't, you know, it can't be a coincidence that Ross Thompson, like you say, Craig, Ross Thompson comes on, is a better fit for the game plan. Blair Kinghorn slots very nicely in at 15, makes a wonderful cover and tackle, and Scotland play better rugby because Johnny, everyone's playing in position.
Yeah, like that. And because me and Craig have had this exact conversation, we had it earlier today, and I was saying to him that I don't think that as much of it is the fact that Ross Thompson was on, as some people are saying. You know, people are like, oh, see, Ross Thompson came on and all of a sudden the attack got better. It's like, yeah, but that, it wasn't because Ross Thompson was on. It's because Ross Thompson is a 10 and was playing at 10, and Blair Kinghorn's a brilliant fullback. I was playing at fullback, and suddenly everyone was in position. Like, I think a lot of what made Scotland's attack better was Blair Kinghorn attacking from 15, because he cut some absolutely fantastic lines. He linked up with the rest of the backline really well. Ross Thompson put him away a couple of times. It was a team where I think they all looked a bit more confident. They all looked a bit more comfortable. And they were attacking better. There's no getting away from it. When Thompson came on and Kinghorn went to 15, the attack did get a bit more fluent and it did get a bit better. But I don't think it was because Ross Thompson was on. I think Kinghorn playing 15 probably had as much to do with it as Ross Thompson did.
Yeah. I want to talk about the forwards. I think one of the kind of big takeaways for me this weekend, Craig, was, and you've touched on it already, is that when Scotland play with two open sides, and I include Jamie Ritchie in that because I know he's a kind of seen as a six and a half sometimes, but he's one of the best fetchers in the Northern Hemisphere right now. When Scotland play with two open sides rather than one open side and one kind of blind side or a lock, everything's so much better. Did we disrupt the opposition attack better? We defend better. And it just seems, again, I don't understand why we've at times reverted back to, you know, sticking Sam Skinner at six because we're up against France, for example, rather than playing our own game. Because when we've played our own game this weekend and not really worried about the physicality of it and just stuck dodging the mission at every ruck, it's paid dividends.
Where Scotland are best, and where I feel Scotland are best, and is when we are set up going down the route of Tooney's fastest, most skillful team in the world. Sort of when he came out and said we want to play the fastest rugby in the world. When our forwards are going down that route, and we've got two sevens really playing both sides of the field, I think it's teetered at points where we've been thinking actually it's not working as well. But that was when, dare I say it, we had a lighter weight eight. But Matt Fagerson has really come on and really has made the position his. He's incredibly strong over. He's built up. I don't think he's been perfect for some time, but I think he has really worked into that situation where now it's his jersey and someone has to take it off him. And I totally agree. Don't get me wrong, Sam Skinner's come to Edinburgh and I'm looking forward to seeing him play. But when he plays at six, we played a bit about with what's his name? He's injured. He's an Edinburgh player. God, it's gone right in my head. The ballet, Nick Haining. The ballet dancer. When he was playing at eight or at six, Scotland just didn't seem to be right in the forwards. You know, we've got an incredibly strong and mobile front row, a mobile tight five altogether, but an incredibly mobile back row. And I think that's where we play our best rugby, and that's where it seemed to click on the weekend.
Yeah. Johnny, you agree with that?
Absolutely. My only slight counterpoint to it would be that when Andy Christie came on, he was incredible. And he doesn't go after the ball very much, but what he did do was some ridiculous chop tackles. Like, he was round people's ankles every single time. And if it was anybody within about sort of two passes from the ruck, somehow Andy Christie was there every single time. And he was like right round their ankles, take them down, and there was somebody over the ball straight away.
That's a Saracen thing, that it really is. They do a lot of that,
He was really good. But he kind of had almost no interest in going after the ball, really. All he did was like chop people down, get back up, chop down the next person.
Yeah.
But it worked when he was on. You didn't really notice a drop-off.
Yeah, there's one with about, I think, an Argentine attack when they were about 5 metres from the line and only 6 minutes from the end. You can hear Reynald saying, no, his arm went in first. Because he has just leapt off the line and just smashed some of the shins.
Yeah.
He's looked very impressive.
Yeah. I struggle to work out who, if everyone's fit, who goes in the back row now? Because you've got Jamie Ritchie still to come back in.
Well, I think Darge drops. I think you'd have Mish, Ritchie and Ferguson. I thought Matt Ferguson was immense at the weekend.
Yes. Oh, he was great, yeah. But then does Darge go on the bench or does Christie go on the bench?
You're going to play Darge.
Probably Darge.
Yeah.
But you have
I honestly don't think I could leave Christie out of the team completely. If he could defend like that consistently, I don't know if I could leave him out, especially if we're winning a game. He's the person you want to come on.
Yeah, but then you have to, it's swings. You have to take all the conditions into account, don't you? And you look at Matt Ferguson. Matt Ferguson, I remember when Craig was talking earlier about, body shapes and people falling out. When Matt Ferguson made his debut, Gregor Townsend was still like, we're not sure, because he's still only 17, 18. We're not sure exactly if he's going to have a growth spurt and be a definite number eight or if he's going to be a seven. But the thing is, he's good at that chop tackle as well. And Rich, he can't ever leave Hamish Watson. We've seen Tooney do it and been appalled. Yeah. I mean, Hamish Watson came in on Saturday and, no surprise, surprise, wins man of the match. As he
but the thing is, you can't
miss his tackle, which was appalling. Richie is like my first name on the team sheet.
Yeah, for a lot of reasons, I think Richie is Scotland's most important player.
Yeah. But then you've got this amazing talent, Rory Darge. Ferguson, like Craig's saying, I think he has now cemented number eight for all the, but he's not big enough crowd. I think he's proved he's not tall enough for you, but he'd tell you what, he's bloody tough enough.
I think the chances are that you, it's going to be rare that you will have Richie, Watson and Ferguson all fit at the same time. So I don't think it's that often that you're going to be faced with the Darge Christie dilemma, if I'm honest, Johnny. Yeah. There'll be enough opportunity for them both to slip in and out. It's enough that we've got somebody else of that caliber who can come in. And that's quite exciting.
You also have to remember that I might be wrong in this, but this will probably be Missy's last World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whereas Rory will go on the World Cup tour. He'll go to the World Cup and he'll get experience of the World Cup, and then you'll probably see the handover slowly off. He'll get more and more game time and you'll see him coming in.
Yeah, but we can't allow sentimentality to take over quality.
Don't get me wrong. Listen, if you said to me that Mish was, I didn't think Mish should go. Should have gone on to Argentina, because I thought he should have been left at home because his performance this year was showing as if he's incredibly tired and he's needing a rest. And I was really surprised for him to go. So for him to come out and put a man in the match performance in was very, very good, and it opened my eyes. But it certainly, you know, it's difficult.
I'm excited about Hamish Watson being captain.
Yes, I was just about to say that. Yeah.
Because... And I was watching there was the interview with Gregor Townsend after the squad was announced on the SRU YouTube channel, saying, you know, he's not been captain before, but he stepped up on this tour as a leader.
Mm.
And when you see, I mean, even like him getting his 50th cap, I mean, you know, Gilchrist got me in the feels when he was blubbing about the fact that he was getting Mish's 50th cap. But then he's just he's a very clear communicator, Hamish Watson. And he never takes a step backwards. You know, I don't think he's had games where he's not been outstanding for Scotland. I don't think he's ever had, aside from his debut where he got yellow carded within 5 minutes of coming on, I don't think he's never had a bad game for Scotland.
Still, no.
He's never had anything below a seven. I don't think he's ever put in anything below a seven out of 10.
I don't know. Has he, Cammy?
I don't know. I'd have to check the record. Did he play on that? Yeah, I don't think he did, you know. I don't know. I would have given him, I wouldn't have given Mish a seven.
Oh, shit.
I'll check on that while we carry on talking. But Craig, Hamish Watson is captain. Is he captain Ember before?
No, I don't think so. Not in my memory. So you know, he's and you said it, if I remember correctly, when we talked about him going out to Argentina, and you said, you know, he's been given a chance to come out and just be on tour and be part of the group. And there's a reason for it. And this has obviously been Tooney's reason for it. Now, okay, fair enough. I think, is Gilchrist injured? Or I've not seen anything released to say why he's not in the squad. Because he's not even on the bench. So he's completely out of the squad. So, you know, I don't know whether it's been fortune that's favoured Mish, but certainly, just as you say, Tooney's come out and said, you know, he's been a great leader for all the players that have been out there, all the young lads as well. So I think, just as you were saying earlier, there was a reason for it, and this is obviously the reason for it.
Yeah. It seems strange to me, Johnny, that he hasn't been part of the leadership group before, which is kind of what Townsend was alluding to, that you would have thought Mish would have been right in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird one, and whether it's one of these things where, like, he's not formally part of the leadership group, but everybody knows that, like, you always just listen to Mish. Because I think, like, Hamish Watson strikes me as the kind of person who doesn't have to be in the leadership group to be a leader, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, like he's maybe not necessarily part of the formal leadership group, but when he speaks, you listen. Type thing.
Ian disappeared. I don't understand.
Hello,
what happened.
Sorry, there. Yes. I've had my work laptop plugged in and I hadn't plugged my own laptop in, so the battery died.
Oh, well, nice to have you back. I was checking out my... I hadn't noticed that happened because I had another tab open checking what marks I gave Hamish Watson out of that England game, and I'm upset to say I gave him 0 out of 10. My exact words. Now, this is a Lions year. For context, this was a Lions year. So I said he's managed some of his trademark runs, but exposed at the breakdown. Back to touring with Scotland in the summer. That's an allusion to not being on the Lions tour. No longer deserving of a nickname, 0 out of 10.
You absolute son of a
monster. Oh, that was the year. That's the year we christened him Pinball, you see.
What was interesting, if I don't know if you saw the Tooney chat on Twitter, or no, you said you saw it on YouTube. I didn't care if it was a different cut. But Tooney said that this was the first tour that Watson had been voted in as part, obviously with Hogg and that away, they were doing votes on leadership group, and Watson got voted into as part of the leadership group. He was apparently the most popular vote. And I think just before I got cut off, like I think I heard you were saying, I think he has become, he goes in front of the cameras now. I mean, usually he has to do it because he's one man of the match. But he was a sort of Vodafone, he had his own like Mish cam on the Lions tour. after winning the player tournament. And like you say, you know, he leads by actions. He's not a big shouter, but when he speaks, you listen, because he's got to that stage now where, you know, like you said, he's a constantly good performer. He's in the cold face. He gets stuck in. You follow that man into battle. So you just, you know, he doesn't need to be loud. Whatever he says has weight to it.
Yeah. Look, we've hit the hour mark, and joining us fresh from his tennis, it's John Anderson. Hello, John.
Hello, hello, hello. How are we all?
Wonderful. John's wearing his headset, but he's using it clearly on his laptop mic.
Am I?
Yeah. It sounds like you're speaking to us from inside a cave, John. So what I'm going to do, we're going to wrap it up there. If you for the main podcast, while John sorts out his mic and makes it sound like he's not in a cave. That's it for the main pod this week. We're not entirely certain whether there will be a main pod this week. There will be next week, sorry. There will be a Patreon summer tour kind of end of season wrap up next week for definite. We may put, depending if there's any news or any big talking points from the game this weekend, we may put out a normal podcast as well. So keep an eye on
or a new Glasgow coach.
Or a new Glasgow coach, indeed. we may put out a main podcast for that. So watch the channels. There'll definitely be a Patreon podcast next week. We're going to go and record our Patreon special now. John's going to have to catch up with some of the running jokes we've had for this. I'm about to confuse him by talking about John Hollis. He won't have a clue what we're talking about. For the moment, though, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Craig, Ian, John from his cave, and Johnny.
Hello.
Cheerio on it.